Welcome back. My fingers are so cold from being outside. I slipped on the keyboard there. But you're here. Oh, Suze, my day is complete. That is enough. And I just hope it keeps getting better. But that was really powerful, beautiful. So welcome again, everyone. My name is Susan Alatrico. I'm so happy you are here today. So I'm going to bring the compassion face of love and offer some thoughts for you. And maybe let's just make sure we are all muted. You might hear a heater come on when I'm talking, so we can have compassion for that. So I want to begin with the Arya Paryasana Sutta, translated as the Noble Search. It's interesting because after the Buddha's enlightenment, it is said that he was inclined to inaction and not toward teaching the Dhamma. In his reflection of his enlightenment, he's said to have considered the Dhamma that I've attained is profound, hard to see, hard to understand, unattainable by mere reasoning, subtle to be experienced by the wise. He continued, if I were to teach the Dhamma, others would not understand me, and that would be wearying and troublesome for me. And then it said a deity appeared and spoke to the Buddha and told him, there are people with little dust in their eyes who are wasting through not hearing the Dhamma. There will be those who understand. The Brahma spoke further and said, let the sorrowless one survey this human breed, engulfed in sorrow, overcome by birth and old age. Let the blessed one teach the Dhamma. And thus the Buddha was motivated to teach through his compassion. And to develop this mind state of compassion is to learn, as the Buddha put it, to have sympathy for living beings, all living beings without exception. And this eightfold path that moves us in the direction to care for the suffering and well-being of all, especially around right view, right intention, and right action. The entire path is described as having two wings, the wings of the wisdom and compassion. Wisdom is the discernment of the truth, of the way things are, and compassion is response to the suffering. The first noble truth, the truth there is suffering. And each serves one in balance. Sometimes the moment calls for us to have a soft heart with vulnerability. Sometimes we need a fierce, strong quality that engages and responds, knowing what's needed to serve the situation and then knowing when it's time to end that engagement. So wisdom and caring, mindfulness are inherent in compassion. There's a story Sharon Salzberg shares in her book, Loving Kindness, that shows this strength of compassion. In India, decades ago, she was traveling in a rickshaw and was attacked by a drunken man in the village. No one came to rescue her, but this friend sitting next to her pushed the man away. And when she got to the meditation center in Bodh Gaya, still shaken, her teacher, Munindra, said, oh, Sharon, with all the loving kindness in your heart, you should have taken your umbrella and hit the man over the head with it. And so it's not a passive energy, and it's caring for oneself just as much as Suze spoke, as anyone else. It's not to take the hurt, to take it, so to speak. So in order to have compassion for others, we must include ourselves first. Otherwise, it will be as limited as looking through a window and seeing the lives of others rather than actually sitting at the table in relationship to others. Sitting at the table requires vulnerability, a sense of facing our fears while allowing ourselves to be fully human, not required to be perfect. And so when we make mistakes, do we comfort ourselves or blame and shame ourselves? And so I ask, can we be too tender? Is it possible to be too gentle or too kind to ourselves? Roshi Joan Halifax adds, how can we give and accept care with strong back, soft front compassion, moving past fear into a place of genuine tenderness? I believe it comes about when we can truly be transparent, seeing the world clearly and letting the world see into us. It seems like a massive undertaking to have sympathy for all beings. Thankfully, the Buddha said it's a gradual practice, and we often learn our readiness to meet the suffering of others and ourselves by seeing the opposite when we're not in such an open state. And this can free us too. This is discernment and openness about the truth of the way things are. Just last week, I was driving to work and had a sudden insight. It was just like somebody turned the lights on. I'd been musing for quite a while about how to skillfully involve myself in conversation with a difficult person. It was eating me up. I was emotionally really invested in trying to find the right way to win, to convince, and access to an open heart was not available. It was only when I saw the lack of compassion, it was like a light that said, there's no compassion. And immediately I was free and I let go and I felt no shame, no guilt, just this realization that this was missing, this capacity was missing, and that I was no longer trying to strive to find the perfect answer, the perfect solution, and the perfect conversation with this person. Compassion trains the heart mind to see another's reactions as their conditioning, not who they are. When you see someone's conditioning, it's harder to react to them because you know it's not personal. It's not really them. It no longer makes sense to be reactive because there's nothing personal to react from, nothing to defend. All we see is their pain, their conditioning, their suffering. Shanti Deva, Hindu monk and poet, reminds us that all sentient beings have a basic goodness. If we focus on the problem of anger and not the person, we can understand it's their ignorance that's present. It's the causes and conditions that person has, and they have no way of stopping. I was recently inspired by reading about former president of South Africa, Nelson Mandela. He spent 27 years in prison and was said to have exploited the goodness of his guards to arouse their inherent goodness. Wow, that was a new way of looking at compassion for me. It made me think, how can I arouse the inherent goodness in others, especially people who are challenging for me? And I thought, well, I could appreciate them more. And then I realized how difficult it is to show appreciation sometimes for others and myself, and that we just don't appreciate ourselves enough, anybody. And I think it's really important. You know, it carries joy and affection, and it brings us together. But boy, sometimes it's just too much to be witness to someone else's physical, mental, or emotional pain. You know, we don't want to be around it. It feels draining and it makes us mad because, you know, they're going through that. But, you know, it's okay. We have feelings. We're human. And the Brahma Viharas ask us to accept our humanity. And part of our humanity is having feelings, some of them icky, some of them maybe we don't want to admit we have. So can we be present? Can we witness and hold our own pain? It's easy to turn away and focus our attention on some kind of sensual gratification or other gratification. You know, turning to food is a big one for me. Even in meditation, we can avoid our pain, getting lost in a challenge of concentration practices. You can get kind of in a la-la land where you kind of forget where you are. You're perhaps finding some really blissful places in our body, and we can avoid seeing our pain. But this is the wisdom part that compassion has. We need to be present and listening to that, the heart space that's really subtle to hear. And here's just something else too. When we talk about meeting suffering, the compassion, it doesn't have to be big. It can be a hello to someone. Sometimes you can sense people are lonely or they need a hello, saying hello, offering food or a smile, small moments, just listening to someone, being present rather than having to respond, fix. So these are small moments that we can build the muscle of compassion to meet life's more challenging moments, situations. And if we don't really know what's true for ourselves and others, we're going to miss the full capacity of compassion. You know, it's. I remember very early, many years ago, Rodney saying, it's not about being nice. And that just really kind of like, what? Wow, there's something underneath that that's not wanting anything in return. It never fatigues. And one way to access this is through the realization that, you know, we feel our thinking, and our thinking is habit and conditioned. It's not personal. So let me talk about the near enemies and enemies of compassion. The near enemy is pity, because it feels like compassion. Our heart goes out to a situation or a person, but there's a sense of hierarchy. You're kind of looking down from an apartment window, looking down at those poor people. There's a sense of separation with pity, that you've got something better than they do. So it's not actually a heart opening. It causes distance. There's a separateness. And another near enemy is grief. And this can also be a part of a near enemy is grief, because when compassion turns to grief or sorrow and we are attached to it, kind of consumed with it, we don't let it go, there's that overwhelming sense and it overwhelms our sense of wisdom. And mudita, though, interestingly and wonderfully, comes in to balance that overwhelm if we allow it. It serves that purpose. Sympathetic joy moves in. And when compassion moves to despair or sorrow, that our heart is brought in balance, equanimity and joy as well. The far enemy of compassion is cruelty. Cruelty only sees suffering, blaming, judgment, criticism, and fear. And that's a big word, but aren't our words cruel sometimes? When we ignore people, when we control people, we say things. It's tough, but this is the truth compassion asks us to see in ourselves. So when we're in one of those states, we can acknowledge it and open to the truth of the moment and pause. We are only human. This realm is conditioned. These waves of reactive response, seeking satisfaction in ultimately what is unsatisfactory because it doesn't last. So rather than have a reactive response that could cause harm, we can come to that equanimous kind of belief view that there is no good or evil. It only sees suffering and the end of suffering. And Rodney Smith once said, I thought this was good too, we don't have the right to pull off other people's band-aids. Sometimes I just want to set the record straight, tell people they're wrong. But, you know, I want to add to that, but we actually don't have the right to pull off our own band-aids either. You know, and what I think that means is that we meet ourselves more with intention and care and allow ourselves to miss the mark. To sin apparently is translated as to miss the mark. How loaded is that word? But how human is missing the mark? I made a mistake. So for me, reaching compassion, I've had to shed a lot of tears to open to my own pain. And one significant moment showed me that I was not alone and that the separateness I had created was just like, I couldn't believe in it anymore. It was unattainable because I just knew it wasn't true. Eugene Cash talks about meeting compassion with our tears. He says the language of the heart is through tears. He says the heart stays alive and expands with tears because on the other side is joy. You've heard that beautiful phrase that our greatest pain can only be equal to our greatest sorrow. Actually, that was the other way around. Our greatest joy can only be equal to our greatest sorrow. Only. So tears do not last forever. But our challenge is not to get over the tears, to toughen up, to don't show our feelings, but to grow with them, allow them, and trust that they too have their own process. And that sorrow does give way to equanimity. I don't mean to be painting some rosy picture. We should be angry. These are very, very difficult times. So much sorrow. I weep when I read the news. We should be angry and we should be doing something about it. We can, I should say. But not indulging and clinging, attached to the sorrow. I used to do that for a long, long time because I was trying to find happiness in somebody, in other things, that did not reside within myself. That's the trap of the sensual realm, that pleasure out there, or that my happiness resides outside of myself. But not clinging to feelings or getting stuck is really, really difficult. But it does create that view that we're separate. Because I remember feeling so long I was the victim that I couldn't relate to anybody. Nobody could relate to me. I was always the victim, which kept me separate from others. But there's only one humanity. And the heart opens with deep care and attention. And by knowing the truth on a somatic level, a level of body awareness and sensation, the body and the heart work together, says Ajahn Suchito. When one is closed, the other is closed. And he had a very interesting talk. He said, you know, our hearts close 100 times a day. Little things like somebody, you know, blows you off, says a harsh word, you know, if somebody pulls in front of you, little closings. But you know what? It's natural in this realm. Again, it's not shame on me. I was mean, or I'm sad again. It's natural in this realm, but it's not who we are. But love and the heart move slowly. And so taking our time with ourselves through our breath, noticing the body, in any moment, like attending to oneself. If you could consider that we are under a level of stress every moment of our day, that's possible. I know in school, children, literally their frontal lobe is flipped. If you can imagine the first year back from the pandemic and in a classroom, many of these students have missed a year of school. And so we're running around stressed. But so how much access do we have to our hearts? So to stop and breathe in love, to step into the heart and see what happens. We can learn to dance with that flow of the never-ending waves of life. The Brahmaviharas are not Christmas cards, says Ajahn Sue Cheeto. They're vehicles for transformation. One of the 11 gates to the deathless that Sue's talked about the benefits of. A gate into the unconditioned that's not reliant on the sensory world. Call it God consciousness, love, loving awareness. Compassion asks us to go deep and release this shadow of separation. So Cheeto says that relies on that conditioned world for meaning and happiness. But these capacities are alive within us. And as the Buddha said, we can be in the world, but not of the world. We have to resolve not to let fear and doubt take over our hearts. We can meet those thoughts and feelings with compassion when they arise, hold them tenderly. The Pali meaning of compassion is a quiver of the heart. And the other part of compassion is the response, the wise response. But in order to know this, we need to know our own truth, own our own truth, feel into our own truth, and befriend our own truth. This is the nourishment of the opening of the heart. So the question I have is, can we live with our hearts open, out and open in this imperfect, insane world, feel our emotions fully, and also have the intent to have sympathy for all beings because we all share this suffering? This is the potential within us. And I believe this is what compassion is asking us to do. And so keep the gate open, even when we feel like shutting it. That's the turning toward the pain and the fear. So I'd like to close with a poem from the first free women. It's entitled Vaisethi, from Vaisetha. When a child dies, everyone grieves, but a mother's grief is different. Not more real or more important, just different. I can talk about this now. Back then, I just wandered from place to place. I don't know if I ate. I don't know if I slept. From the bottom of that darkness, I heard a voice. It was just a whisper, so I leaned towards it and became a bucket, pulled slowly up from the bottom of a well. In the same way, I called out to my grief and drew it towards me. I held my grief and gently rocked it. I said, "They're there. They're there." People sometimes ask, "Wasn't it painful? Weren't you afraid?" Yes, it was painful. So is giving birth. Oh, my heart, you mustn't fear the pain. Moving into stillness. Moving into a quiet place to begin our guided meditation on compassion. Allowing yourself to breathe. Breathing in. Breathing out. Moving your body if you need to. And remembering, as Suze pointed out, that these Brahmavihara meditation phrases need to be your own in order for your heart to open. So if we resist the phrases, it's not going to work. So we're looking at transforming our relationship to suffering. Not necessarily ending it for all time. We're acknowledging that suffering is all around us in every life, and that we can respond to the truth of it with a tenderness of heart. This is the truth for all beings. We're not separate from one another. You can think of this meditation or these phrases we use as calling on your inner warrior heart's voice, these tender and brave well wishes or prayers. And I like to hold my chest sometimes or my belly, whatever feels like bringing affection and care to you. So if you'd like to gently close your eyes, inhaling through the mouth, exhaling through the mouth, allowing your body to settle and relax, feeling the weight of the body resting on earth, its sense of presence, just right now. You're okay, just as everything is in this moment, naturally aware with mindfulness. Allow your body and breath to release your thoughts. So, as with metta, compassion, or karuna, the phrases can be directed from yourself to all beings. But today, we choose three to focus on. One, a person we care about who's suffering. Maybe not the most extreme example, but who has emotional pain or physical pain. And we'll also work with a difficult person, and then ourselves. The phrases revolve around two basic wishes for compassion. That there is a wish to be free from pain and suffering, and a wish for peace and ease. And I found a few phrases that have resonated for me, and I hope they resonate with you. Now, imagine someone you care for who is suffering emotional or physical pain. And place this person in front of you, perhaps off to the side. It actually could be any one of us in the room. If you're finding it difficult to pick. Pay attention to how your body's feeling when you're with this person. Focus on the sending love, warmth, light. Perhaps if they make you smile, lean into that positive feeling. These phrases are to be felt. No need to rush through them. Feeling each word slowly and fully in your heart. May you be held in compassion. May you hold yourself in compassion. May your struggles and sorrows be eased. May your heart be at peace. May you be held in compassion. May you hold yourself in compassion. May your struggles and sorrows be eased. May your heart be at peace. And perhaps there's a difficult person you'd like to move on to next, or stay where you are. Stay sending compassion to someone you care deeply for, someone you care about. If you're willing, call on someone who has caused you pain or harm. Not necessarily an extremely difficult example. Maybe someone in the room. Remembering we are all someone's difficult person, as Narayan Liebenson mentioned. If someone is causing harm, it's their conditioning, their habit of thinking and acting. It's not truly who they are. If you're choosing this example, you can place this person off to the side, and perhaps imagining looking at their back. And when you have this image, repeating the phrases, may you be held in compassion. May you hold yourself in compassion. May your struggles and sorrows be eased. May your heart know peace. May you be held in compassion. May you hold yourself in compassion. May your struggles and sorrows be eased. May your heart know peace. Breathing in, breathing out. Noticing any emotions that have come forward. Meeting them with kindness, acceptance. Noticing what you're resisting. Without judgment, gently leaving that person, breathing in, breathing out. Turning toward yourself. Imagine seeing yourself in your mind's heart's eye. Perhaps sitting or engaged in an ordinary activity, making tea, reading a book, or eating. or getting ready to go to bed. Directing warmth, light, and love to your heart and that image of you. Repeating the phrases for yourself. May I be held in compassion. May I hold myself in compassion. May my struggles and sorrows be eased. May my heart know peace. Perhaps choosing one of these passages, whatever is resonating for you. May I be held in compassion. May I hold myself in compassion. May my struggles and sorrows be eased. May my heart know peace. In the remaining few minutes, offering yourself compassion as in the way that resonates with your heart. That was a soft bell to bring us back. I hope you all heard that. Thank you again for your beautiful practice.